Hello and welcome to Held in Our Hearts Baby Loss Podcast. We are an Edinburgh-based charity providing baby loss counselling and support for bereaved families. We are committed to ensuring that no family has to face their journey of loss alone, and we wanted to create this podcast to reach out and share stories, encouraging greater connection and understanding. Join us on our journey as we speak to a wide variety of guest speakers who have been personally affected by baby loss or who have been moved by it.
Hello and welcome to our fourth podcast. My name is Nicola and today I have the great pleasure of speaking to Corinne McCulloch, Margaret Follin and Tracy Watt about their own loss and how they include their little one at Christmas time. We discuss ways families might remember their baby at this time of year and tradition some of us may have. We also chat about grief and how this has changed for us all over time. As always, if you or anyone you know has been affected by baby loss, please reach out to us at heldinourhearts.org.uk or email info@heldinourhearts.org.uk. So now, let me introduce Tracy, Corinne and Margaret.
So, good morning. It is Monday, the 7th of December, and I am delighted to have Tracy and Corinne and Margaret join me this morning on our fourth podcast. We're talking about Christmas and how we remember at Christmas, and hoping that anybody who listens might get some ideas or feel a little comforted at this difficult time. I'm wondering if we could just go around and introduce ourselves, if that's okay.
Good morning. Will I start? Okay. Hi, I'm Tracy and I lost my son Lewis 29 years ago. He would have been 30 next year. So I'm certainly long ago bereaved, but that doesn't mean that I forget him at all. I work for Held in Our Hearts. I'm a befriender and I'm also the fundraising manager. So I do a bit of everything with my job and thoroughly enjoy it.
Oh, that's great to hear. Goodness, 30. I can't believe he'd be 30.
You just don't know where it's went. Yeah. Three decades.
Yeah, I bet. And I bet it doesn't change. We can maybe chat about that as we go on. But
So I might go next, if that's okay, Nicola. So I'm Corinne. I lost my son Harris last year. He was born in July and we had him for 5 days and he died in August. So this will be coming up for my second Christmas. And Harris was my only son, or is my only son. So yeah, that's me.
So it's a real contrast then, isn't it, between Tracy and how many Christmases and yourself, and can maybe talk about how that feels as it goes on. And really, yeah, brave of you to join us, Corinne. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Margaret. My daughter Jennifer died nearly 39 years ago now. She would have been 39 in February of next year. And until about 2 years ago, I had really not spoken about it. In those days, there were no, it wasn't encouraged. You didn't have any scan pictures. There was no mementos. There was nothing done to give you anything that would allow you to remember your child particularly. And you were encouraged just to get on with it, inverted commas. So my memories, in a way, have become more intense more recently than they have been over the past 3.5 decades. So since Tracy mentioned this, I've had a long think about previous Christmases, and maybe something that will come up as the podcast progresses. But it's just a sort of kind of slightly back to front process.
Yes, which I think will be really interesting for anybody listening, because of course anyone from any age could hear this. And I think the variety of experiences from us all, you know, it's my son would be 11 now, so we've got a mix of, you know, how many Christmases we've almost survived and how they've felt. And I think that's, you know, really helpful for anyone here. Yeah, Margaret, you mentioned then about all those Christmases. I'm interested, I guess, that I know Jennifer would have been around for you, but in what way was she around before really acknowledging her? Can you articulate that? It's quite a hard question.
It is quite a hard question. And I try to remember how I was feeling, you know, in the first few Christmases. But I found it very hard to bring it back, what I felt. And I think it was just that I had become so practiced and so good at just pushing everything away and pushing it to the back that it became the default position that you didn't think. And I think that's why it came to the fore with such violent vehemence when it did a couple of years ago, because it had been pushed away for so long. I started to then feel guilty with myself for not being able to remember what I felt way back at the beginning, because I felt I should have been more emotional and more remembering. You know, I think we do that an awful lot with ourselves, especially women, I think, this business of should have and what I should have done and how I should have felt, instead of just acknowledging that that's what we did. Yeah. So I think that Jennifer was never there as Jennifer until 2 or 3 years ago. She was always just the baby who died.
Yeah.
And that made it kind of easier, because it depersonalized it.
Yes, I can hear that.
So the real grief and the real remembering of Jennifer came properly when I came into your offices.
Wow, and you've really made me think about how, I don't know how this feels for you to hear, Margaret, but we still have families, even the families who spend lots of time with their baby, saying, I wish I'd done this. Why did I not do this? So isn't it interesting that even though we've moved so far forward, that we still have this feeling of guilt and regret often?
Yeah.
How does that feel for you, Corinne, hearing?
So I accessed yourselves quite early on. I was, you know, I was pointed in your direction before I even left the hospital, so I knew about you. And I did have all the opportunities to, you know, make some memories in the hospital. I got a memory box, and the neonatal staff were just amazing and helped guide me through, you know, what sort of things we could do. And we did lots of artwork and, you know, when Harris was still here. So I did have that opportunity. And, you know, I can fully appreciate that had a huge impact on the, you know, months following on from Harris dying, because I had something that I could, you know, something physical that I could actually go back to. But yeah, that first Christmas, I think for me, I've always been someone who tries not to, you know, have regrets or I should have done that, or, you know, you can't go back and change it. So that's just who I am as a person. But that first Christmas, there was a lot of expectation around it, and people saying, oh, it's going to be really hard for you, and, you know, how's this going to work? And so I just took the mindset, well, I'm not going to have any expectations. I'm not going to plan anything, because I might not be able to do that. So I just really went with the flow. And when it came to Christmas, I was feeling quite good that day. So I thought, well, I'm feeling good. So, you know, I'll continue with that. And I was with my family, a few of us together and some kids around. And actually, I had a really good time. And then I remember in January when the first support group was coming up, I thought, oh, I don't know if I can come to the support group and tell everybody that I had a really good Christmas, because that's not what you're meant to do.
Almost guilt then. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. I'm just talking about like that guilt, and now you're feeling guilty for actually not falling apart and being the nest in the house.
And you know, I'm sure other people in my family were falling apart but managed to hide it quite well. But I just thought, no, I'm feeling good today, let's just go for it, let's have a good time. Because there's lots of days that you don't feel good, and you can you know, pick up with your feelings then. This year might be completely different. Again, I don't know how it's going to be, how I'll feel on that day. I think that first Christmas, it just came very fast after Harris had died, because he died early August and suddenly it was Christmas. So it was all a bit of a blur, I suppose, as well. So, you know, I don't know how future Christmases will be, but I try not to really plan anything for that reason, just to see how things are and take it from there.
Wow, I really love that whole thinking style of going, I don't know how I'll be, so therefore I'm not going to presume it's going to be necessarily really painful or hard. And I really heard what you were saying about I can fall apart on other days.
And I do.
But I didn't know. I've adapted that over the years for me. I tried to do that. I tried to think, no, because this is his birthday, or this is the day that I want to do this for him. But actually, that took me years, Karine. Like, you know, and I'm just interested that you so early have kind of, and it's a hard work, isn't it? I don't think you just default to that. I think you have to actually actively think about that. But maybe with conversations with others and maybe that early support, you know, I'm just thinking of that contrast. Does it help in some ways?
Yeah. And I mean, coming on to this, I didn't know if I would tell everybody that or not, because I know a lot of people, you know, that, yeah, they're different from me and people have different experiences, but, you know, we're all going through it, but it comes to us at different times. And I just take the approach that, I don't make plans or I have to do this or I have to do that, because then there'll be, you know, disappointment or whatever if I can't do that.
I think that'll be helpful for someone listening, though, because I think it will take that pressure off. It shouldn't be anything. It's like grief. Grief shouldn't look like anything. It looks what it feels like for you, isn't it?
Yeah. And I don't mean it in a flippant way, but, you know, Christmas is just another day. Every anniversary is just another day. And, you know, you live with this for your life. So why put additional pressure onto yourself? I mean, if you do have plans and you follow them through, I think that's amazing that people can do that. But for me, you know, I can't do that. So I do my thing, which is just let's wait and see what happens and I'll do what I feel like on the day.
Yep, I think that'll be helpful for people to hear the differences. And I'm wondering, Tracy, how your journey's been over those Christmases then.
Just before I go into that, I want to say that I think that's lovely listening to Karine there, that, you know, you've already, you know, it's not like you've got a set plan in stone. It's like you're going to wait and see how it's going to be for you on the day. As you say, it is just another day. And as you say, having that early support, you can feel the difference that's made, which is absolutely brilliant to hear. And I think as Margaret and I both know, I had Lewis in April and then my sister got married in the June. So our whole family focus became about my sister's wedding. And then we had moved away to Fort William 6 months after Lewis had died. So by August, I was living in a completely different area with a whole new job, new house, new circle of friends. So that felt quite strange, because then what happened is for that first Christmas we came home and nobody wanted to speak about Lewis. We'd got Ian this really small teddy. He called it Scooby, and I still have that teddy to this day. He's left home and got married. He's 31 now, and he's not taking that with him, because to me, I'm keeping it, because it's just that whole part of both of my sons. And when we came home, this focus was on Ian and Scooby for some reason, and nobody really wanted to speak about Lewis. And although he was mentioned very briefly, that whole conversation moved on. So that first couple of Christmases were very much like that. It felt very strange that he wasn't mentioned. And as Margaret and I chatted about before, it was that whole, well, he's there and we know that he's there, but it didn't feel like you could mention him for quite a few years, but we always remembered.
And Scooby, sorry, was Scooby gifted in your eyes as a sort of almost Lewis bear teddy? You know, was he kind of symbolically attached to Lewis if you look back?
We got Scooby. He sits on my windowsill. And funny enough, this year, because we're at home for Christmas, which has been, we're usually away, Scooby is... We talked about putting Scooby underneath the Christmas tree last night. So we thought he's just that memory. And also we've got a star with Lucy's name, which is the first time in a very long time that we've done something like that as well. And as Margaret says, again, it's just nice to be able to remember. But Scooby was given to Ian when I was pregnant with Lewis. So this was going to be the teddy that Ian was going to give to Lewis in the hospital. So when he came in to the hospital, he did have Scooby with him. Unfortunately, he didn't part with him. So we didn't force that issue. So there's always been that connection there with
My goodness. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that. Scooby goes on holiday. How have I missed that? Oh, yeah, I can see then absolute importance of that. My goodness, yeah. I love those stories. Yeah. And those stories sort of tradition. So I'm hearing that we've got lots of different versions of what we do. It'd be interesting to hear if anybody has sort of those traditions, because I was hearing you, Corinne, and it'll be interesting because I'm sure we will keep in touch for a long time. But I tried one time just going, I'm just not going to do anything. I'll just see how I feel. And that didn't work for me. So oddly, I felt like I don't know if it was a Christmas or a birthday. I think it was a Christmas. I kind of felt like I didn't really know how he was going to be included and what was I doing to remember him. And I found myself in my room. I disappeared off and I went away and got his things. And my mum found me ages later just sitting in the corner of the room with his things. And she was like, where have you been? I was like, I just got too much. I just need to be with my other son. And then I've then done different things. And I wonder if anyone else has got then traditions that they do just to kind of go, for me, this is how I remember him or include him. I can hear about a Scooby, but do you do anything else, Tracy?
I always take time out. For me, again, I've worked a lot through Christmas. So, and that I think became a bit of a get out clause with my job, that I worked in a hotel on Christmas Day, which is all, as you know, it's all singing, all dancing, and people are there celebrating as families. But there's always that time you would get up in the morning and think, wow, he was here. He was part of our family. But not in a whole active way that I would maybe go away and sit. I would maybe just be doing something. You take those few minutes to think. Mm. It's never really a tradition. Mm. But because I've always worked on Christmas at Christmas time, it's always been a very busy time. And I always think, for me, because I'm somebody who is on the go, sometimes it was maybe that get out clause for me that I didn't have to sit down. And again, that feeling of guilt sometimes would come in. I think I didn't want to sit down because it was too painful. So I would be quite happy to work on Christmas morning at 6 o'clock and be there still at 10 o'clock at night, because Ian would be with his dad, or then he moved out and had got his own house. So if someone said, do you want to work at Christmas, then I would just be happily going and work. And it was that whole, I think I was running away to some extent.
And would you definitely know it was there, or is it not as easy to say, well, I definitely knew it was about Lewis, or do you just feel like there was just that feeling of, I just keep busy?
Mm-hmm. It was that feeling of, there was sadness, but I couldn't always quite put my finger on it. You know, it's that whole nostalgia people are always reflecting and going back at Christmas time. So I think it was just that feeling of sadness that now, through getting support through the charity, I could link it to actively to Lewis, whereas before I would just generally feel quite sad.
That's interesting, isn't it? And Margaret, I don't know how you feel hearing that.
Well, I never had any kind of tradition or anything at all. As I say, it was so practiced at all going. And I think in my family, it was a question of, you know, as I said, you just get on with it. You don't, and don't spoil anything for anybody else. You know, if you brought the subject of Jennifer up, that would spoil everybody else's Christmas. And you wouldn't do that. And because she had never been the subject of any conversation, it would never have come easily. It would never have, it would have been a big thing, a big issue. And so therefore, over the years, it just became easier and easier as the years went by. And it was only if I was by myself, or if a particular song came on the radio, that I used to get really emotional, and it came up then. Whereas at Christmas, it was always, Christmas is a happy time, so don't spoil it, which is ridiculous.
And because it's really interesting to hear that, isn't it? I wonder if everybody else can understand that listening, like that kind of like, don't bring it up because this is an upsetting thing.
It would be for other people, and it would spoil things, and it's not a happy thing, and you know, all these kind of things. And as the years went on, that it would have become even more and more of an issue out of the blue to suddenly introduce some sort of tradition around about Jennifer when people weren't even used to describing her as Jennifer. She was just, and because there was nothing tangible, there was nothing there, and I didn't even have a picture of her in her, in my mind, because I never saw her. So it's all very weird, and it's just another example of why remembering and bringing your daughter or son into your life always is a good thing, and the best thing to do.
I completely agree with you, Margaret. Yeah, because Harris is always and will always be very much part of my life.
Well, that's it's good is not the right word, but it's it is the thing, because Jennifer, as I said, she was not a part of our Christmases. She was not a part of our life until reasonably recently, and I think it's, as you said right at the beginning, even although we have come a long, long way, there's still lots of work to be done on unpicking how people feel about talking about the death of a baby.
I think it's really interested in that sort of feeling of how do we incorporate and include them without it being sad. I wonder, like then, you know, how do we do that? Because I think that's what we need to do collectively. Society needs to be able to, you know, they talk about an empty chair. You pull up an empty chair at Christmas, and some families do that. They'll actually have like the symbolic empty chair. We have a candle, and so I stop everybody and light my candle and say, I'm lighting a candle for all those that can't be here. And I've had a few awkward Christmases where I've done a toast, and I've seen some faces think, uh-oh. But it's being, I don't know about everybody else, but it's being brave, I think. I think it's having the courage to go, this isn't about how I think that you feel. This is about us remembering. And actually wonder sometimes by doing that, the faces aren't one off. Like, why are you doing that? I wonder if sometimes it's because people are actually feeling it anyway, and what you're doing is bringing that, you know, it's like the elephant in the room. It's just saying, this is how we remember, and actually almost having to be like, screw everybody if they don't like it, because this is my child, or this is how I remember.
It is definitely that brave, you know, as you say, Nicola, being brave, because I know for me, looking back, there's quite a few Christmases where I would mention Lewis, but it would be alcohol related. I'd maybe have a few drinks, and then I would have that bravery to want to talk about him. And that would make for a difficult conversation sometimes, but having that time where you're able to go, yes, I can mention him, and it, you know, not being, you maybe had a few glasses of wine at Christmas, and it make it, you know, you then other people feeling really awkward about you mentioning it. It's just being able to have the bravery to say, look, you know, he was here.
Yes, I hear that. And especially then, I suppose that must be classic for some people, is that inhibitions, you've had a few drinks and then you talk about them, but then you're not in a position then maybe to hold what comes next, because perhaps then you've also had a few drinks, and I think it's like other people clearly then maybe not being able to handle that too. So maybe like you say, like what we're just talking about, that bravery. And I mean, bravery, Margaret, that must have been, I'm interested to hear how you broke that almost pattern of, you said before, Jennifer not being Jennifer almost, and included and talked about. How did that then evolve into?
No, it didn't evolve at all until I came into your offices. I mean, we don't, it just wasn't talked about. now.
Yeah. I mean, I never stop speaking about Harris. You know, I meet my mum quite frequently for a walk, and Harris is always part of the conversation. My sister and her children and husband, they're living elsewhere just now, but, you know, occasionally I get the odd message from a 12-year-old niece. I'll give you an example. So a few weeks ago, she sent me this beautiful picture of a morning sky. She'd obviously taken it that morning, and there was a moon and there was a really bright star. And, you know, she sent me this message saying, "Oh, hi, I seen Harris this morning on his way to the moon." And, you know, it was just so lovely. And even if that's only one out of my nieces and nephews who, you know, I'm sure they all remember him, but, you know, one who actually will contact me and say, "Oh, I was thinking this about Harris or that," you know, it's just such a nice thing to know that other people, you know, I think it takes the pressure off if it's not just you that's trying to remember your baby. You know, if you're able to share your baby with other people and they remember, you know, I think that just makes it so much better. But I appreciate it's difficult to get to a point where you can be able to talk about your baby. You know, I just about went at that last thing that I said. You know, that made me feel quite upset, saying that, you know, he's part of my life and always will be, but that's how it is. So yeah, I think if you're able to share with other people, if you can do that, it could be a really positive thing, because then they come to you with the way that they remember your child as well.
Yes, that's really great for someone to hear, isn't it? Because people that are not bereaved listening to this might maybe fear upsetting. What would you say then about that, if you were to send a message or a text or an image or something and you go, "Oh, maybe that'll upset them"? What's your thoughts on that, Karine?
I think it's probably something that I've heard from you guys. You know, nobody can make me more upset than what's actually happened. So just, you know, if you upset me, it's not because of you, it's because of what's happened. And I think, again, just going back to the time in hospital, you know, I remember with the neonatal nurses, there was lots of, "Oh, you could try this or you could do that, or what about this?" And yeah, it was quite overwhelming at the time, but I was so grateful for that, because there was lots of things I wouldn't have done or tried. Or I think just try and do everything. There'll be certain things that you really don't feel comfortable with, and, you know, you won't do that, and that's fine. But yeah, I think just, yeah, well, be open to what people say. Yeah,
it gives you things to talk about with others, so that then they latch on to, doesn't it? So if you're saying that your Harris to you represents like a star, like my Theo is like a rainbow, and so I get pictures of rainbows all the time, and or people will hear like someone over the rainbow and then say, "Oh, I thought of Theo today." So I think your storytelling encourages people to be involved, and I can hear with Tracy and Margaret then that must be so much harder, because it's almost like a catch up, isn't it? Of like going, "Oh, but now I'm here," where for you and I, Karine, right from day one, from Theo's funeral, there was things that people then associated with him. And it allowed almost like a language, a story together. And the same with, when you were thinking about that stars, like, I don't know if everybody else, but like, not so much maybe now, but a lot of my Christmases following, people would write "Remembering Theo with a little star." And I don't know if anybody else has that. Do people remember? How do you feel if they remember in the cards?
I think it's seeing your baby's name. Hearing people say, you know, remembering, as you say, Karine, remembering Harris, and, you know, remembering Margaret and remembering Theo. It's knowing that people remember, and it's having, because you're learning to get the courage to talk about your baby as much, then other people will talk about your baby and say your baby's name. And I think, you know, the more often you hear your baby's name, it's with such pride. Because I know for myself too, it was, again, getting that support years later, that I had never heard Lewis's name said so much in the last 5-6 years than, you know, in the whole 29 years that's passed. The last 5 years, Lewis's name is said nearly every day, and that is, you know, whether that's with friends or family or within the charity. And it's also allowed my mum, I think, as well, the chance to be able to speak about Lewis, because she didn't know how to But now she does speak about Lewis a lot more. And for me, that's something that I'm very grateful to Held in Her Heart for allowing me to be able to show my mum that she could say Lewis's name and that she wasn't upset. As you say, Karine, the worst things totally happened to us as bereaved parents that could happen, but allowing our families to be able to say, you know, it's okay to say our baby's name and to write it down somewhere and knowing they're not going to upset us. That's I mean, that's mother's pride, really.
I'm just hearing how much courage it takes from us all, isn't it? It keeps coming back to this bravery to be the one who is encouraging others and showing the way, which is not always easy when you're newly bereaved, is it? You know, you can see how certainly we've heard over the years of bereaved parents where they felt unable to at the beginning for whatever reason, and then they find it just becomes a bit of a thing. You know, it's almost like they say, well, years later. But because just like you've spoken about Wendy, you then go, oh, well, I'm now going to start introducing this. So,
I mean, even just thinking about the Christmas service that you do, Nicola. So last year, I just couldn't entertain that at all. You know, I just thought, no, I can't. I'm not going to be part of that. But then this year, I thought, well, actually, no, I'm going to put Harris's name forward this year. And I did. And yeah, I found the service very emotional, and some parts of it were, you know, I did feel quite upset, but actually when I heard his name being read out, it actually made me feel, you know, happiness that he was part of that with everyone else. So that it was just really nice to hear his name being read out. And, you know, I guess that's something now that I've tried it, that's something that I'll want to continue. So maybe that becomes part of the tradition of what happens at Christmas for Harris.
That's really nice to hear, because there was about 250 names, believe it or not. And for us, considering how that would feel like, you know, so many names and the time, but we were like, no. And, you know, we lit a candle for each baby.
I was wondering if you had a candle for every baby. I saw there's a lot of candles.
Yeah, we just thought, let's be authentic about this. This is unusual times during COVID. And so every baby has a candle and every star goes on a tree. And I know one of my traditions, interestingly, is that we all gather around the tree before putting Theo's bauble on. I didn't do that at the beginning. So what my first maybe 2-3 years possibly, I found it unbearable to put the tree up. And it was a really sad occasion. Like, I just cried putting the tree up. And I remember getting to a point of thinking, this isn't right. Like, I can't survive every Christmas like this. So again, I think it's when you sometimes come across difficult things that you think, I need to change this. Well, for me, it was like, this can't be sad, because actually this isn't fair on my other children. So I then had this tradition that his bauble goes on and we all stand and watch. And we say, right, remembering Theo. And that's how I start my Christmas period, if that makes sense. That goes up. And then I feel like I can then go, right, I'm acknowledging him, and then move on. And it's funny how we get those little things, isn't it, just to make us survive through that time. But the service, I think, is symbolic of that, isn't it? It's almost going, right, here they are. I'm representing them either on my tree or somebody else is doing that for me. But I'm pleased that service, you know, gave you comfort with we see Harris's star being added.
Yeah, it was nice. And funnily enough, so last year I did buy, you know, because it was his first Christmas, I thought, well, everybody else with their babies, they mark the first Christmas. So, you know, that's something that I feel that I should do. So, yeah, I did buy a couple of special little decorations for the tree. And then this year I've bought another thing for the tree. I don't know that I'll do that every year. And I'm not saying that's something that I need to do, but, you know, just go with what feels right to you, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Somebody might have a tree with like 20 baubles over 20 years, and somebody might just have that symbolic one, and others say, I don't need to do that, I'm doing it this way. It's very individual, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that what you say, Karine, about being able to just go with the flow and react to the day as it comes, whatever the day brings and however you feel, is not ever to try and push it away, because it'll come back eventually at some point in many different ways. Yeah. Sometimes some quite destructive and negative over the years if you don't talk about it and bring it out at the time, I think. anyway.
Yeah, no, that's good for us to hear, Margaret. And do you do anything for Jennifer now then, Margaret?
Not in the family, because my family's kind of always been spread around. We don't mm-hmm. often have a family Christmas as such. Mm-hmm. So no, I'm content to be able mm-hmm. to sit and remember her and talk about her in this setting and to one or two other people. And to be able to just do that and to call her Jennifer and to try and, I sometimes play silly games with myself, maybe at Christmas or on her birthday, about what she would look like and what she would wear. And I'm giving her a persona that I think I would have liked for myself. I would have really have loved to have been a punk if I'd have been a bit younger and wear Doc Martens and fishnet tights and things. So I imagine that's what she's like. Poor Jennifer, she probably would have wanted to have been nice, stayed with 27 Hill. She's getting the legacy of Doc Martens and fishnet tights with her. Like,
yeah, I love it. I love it. Uh-huh. And who can challenge us? Because they're ours, aren't they?
I know. That's it. And but what I think I've said this before, but my son, Andy, who was 3 when she was born, his daughter is called Katie Jennifer. He gave her a middle name. And that was his, and that came out of the blue, which really meant an awful lot to me. But I buy Katie things, like I bought her sparkly Doc Martin type boots last year, and this year she's got a pair of tartan leggings with zips on them. And I think, it's just projecting.
Oh, I love it. What a thoughtful thing to have that legacy name live on in someone else,
yep.
isn't it?
Yeah,
that must feel amazing. Really,
it was. It was very, very, and it, as I say, it came out of the blue, and it meant a lot at the time, and you know we've talked about it since, and he remembers more than I give him credit for because he was 3. So
it's amazing to hear that, isn't it? How kind of, I think children often mask it for the adults, but it's not then to ever underestimate that they carry that. Now, it might not be in a sense of loss. I think, through conversations with many, many families over the years, I think it's important that we don't associate with them feeling sad necessarily about it, and because it's a different feeling than what we are, you know, and sometimes it's projecting that on children, where I don't think that is the case. I think they know it and they grow up and they adjust to it, but I think they do it in a way that they were my brother or sister, and I think they remember probably in their own way, in a strange way. It might be with friends or like what you say when they go on to have children of their own. I think that's remarkable that Jennifer is always, she's woven through you all, isn't she? And
as this conversation's been going on and we were talking about traditions and me saying I don't have any, but actually I'm creating my own by giving poor Katie for Christmas. Yes. She gets these presents and she seems quite happy to dress up in Barclay Doc Martens. I don't know whether she's just doing it to placate me, but so that is the kind of thing that I'm doing to keep Jennifer in my memory and in the family.
Oh, I love that. It's like, yes, there's a almost this when that buying off or gifting or it's like you're growing, Jennifer's growing with her in a way. It's like you're going back and replacing those 30 years. It's almost, or 39. In some ways, what you're doing is thinking, well, she would be growing. And even though you're not imagining her and maybe at Katie's age, but it's still this growing and growing with. I love that there's, you find a way of nurturing that memory a little, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what would you say to those then that are facing either the first Christmas, I suppose, or perhaps somebody that has never done something but would maybe like to consider or has maybe always wondered how to remember? Would you say anything to anybody?
I would say if you've always been wondering, try and create something. Try and have something, even if it means buying something that you would associate, not physically if you haven't had something, But just having something that you can sit with and to try and get a sense of your baby and nurture that feeling. And if you don't necessarily want to speak about her or him to your immediate family, because sometimes they're the most difficult people if you haven't had that conversation for a long time,
yes,
just choose the person that you're most comfortable with and say something. Just say something about baby, what you think about it, I think. And remember his or her name. Mm. Definitely.
That's wonderful advice, Margaret. What about the others?
I would say that if you found it difficult to have that conversation, one thing that I found that I did for the first time this year, and it was part of our 12 days of Christmas, was to write a letter to your baby and just to write everything down. And for me, that was quite therapeutic in the fact that I wrote quite a bit about Lewis, and it's the same as Margaret, that I have a persona of what Lewis would look like now and how he would have been. And I think that is quite a good thing to do, because whether you're able to say it out loud, but if you can't say it out loud, just write it down and put it somewhere, because then through time, once you've written it down, you then may have, again, go back to that courage. You may have that courage to go, right, I'm going to share this with someone. Or you may give it to someone and say, this is my baby. This is my son. Mm. You know, so I think that in a way could become a tradition, and even a tradition of the year that you write, you know, another year has passed and this is what I've done for your baby.
I've just got this lovely thought, Tracy, about like this, like, you know, like those legacies that everybody leaves behind. You know, imagine, you know, having something that's like maybe 40 or 50 years worth of letters to my child or letters to my baby. How amazing would that be? It's almost like you can imagine a book of somebody saying letters to my child over all those years. It's just a lovely, lovely thought. It's maybe something I might consider taking on.
I wrote a letter to Ian when he was 2. And again, it wasn't surrounding Christmas, but what had happened is he had got lost. And I was very panicked about the fact that he had got lost. So I wrote him a letter, and I wrote down, because I could see how things were going to look in the future, I'm thinking I'm just going to be a totally paranoid mum about where you are and what you do. And I did give that letter to Ian when he was 21, and he read it and he went, yep, that makes a lot of sense about my childhood.
Oh, what an amazing thing to do. How much insight and foresight to think about that. I think he's still got the letter. Does he have it?
Ian's got the letter now. But I have got a copy somewhere in a drawer.
Oh.
Even that may help.
What about yourself, Karine?
So it's interesting you talk about writing, Tracy, because this was something I was thinking about earlier this morning. It's not necessarily relating to Christmas, but, you know, in the early days, I was really worried that I would forget things about Harris or what happened. Or so quite often I would just write little notes into my phone. Or maybe on particular days I was having certain thoughts, so I would put them down and, you know, just keep them somewhere safe. But in terms of, you know, like coming up for Christmas and what to do and how to face that, you know, it's still very early days for me. And as I said earlier, I don't know how this Christmas will be. I don't know how I'll feel or what will happen. Or so, yeah, I think just don't be too hard on yourself, and just, you know, if something, you know, if you decide you want to do something and you do it, great. If you don't manage to do it, that's fine. Just, I think, just take time and be kind to yourself. And yeah, don't put too much pressure on yourself, because, yeah, this is with you for life. So, yeah, just try and take it easy. And, yeah, just.
That's lovely sound advice, Karine. That's, yeah, I think, especially from somebody that's newly bereaved, I think people will really, really hear that.
Go for a walk and get some fresh air.
Yeah, fresh air and a cup of tea, it seems to solve many things, doesn't
that's,
it?
That's the most important thing you can do, even if you can get some fresh air. That's a good start.
I've absolutely loved our conversation this morning, and so grateful for you all for being so open, and I really hope this helps others. Before we finish, though, I ask all the guests on the podcast if they can share something that they're grateful for. It might be today or in general, but I wonder if we could finish with hearing from you all something that you're grateful for. Tracy, do you want to start on?
I would have to say I'm grateful for Lewis, because although he's not here, his memory lives on. And he lives on in the fact that I've met so many amazing families, and I've made so many fantastic friends, and that's all in Lewis's memory. And also the families that I've met, I've heard, been so privileged to hear about so many babies, which is unfortunately very sad, but I'm also very privileged in the fact that I know that, you know, wherever Lewis is at Christmas, that he's being looked after by his friends and family, wherever he is. And I just feel utterly privileged and utterly grateful for him for that.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm not in any way a religious person, so I don't believe in a sort of, well, seeing being or anything like that. But whoever or whatever it was that had me going down to the Craig Lockhart gym, what is it, coming up for, is it 3 years ago now, Tracy?
It will be.
In January.
Yeah.
Can't believe that. The fluke of that and looking up and seeing the Sands banner, you know, that I'm grateful for whatever put me in that place and made me look up and think, goodness me.
Mm.
And then just take the chance and walk in the door.
My first week at work.
Because I think if I had gone away, I don't know if I would have, you know, I think it was the opportunity there and the acting on it. So that, I'm grateful for that happening and the what it's led to.
Wow.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm just really grateful that I've been able to share Harris with other people, and I'll continue to do that, and that other people remember him.
Mm. Oh, thank you all so much for taking part this morning. I'm sure that people listening to this will find a lot of comfort and really feel less alone at this really difficult time of year, and a reminder that we're here for those that need us. Thank you.
Thanks again to Tracy, Corinne and Margaret for talking so openly about their baby and their experiences of how they remember them at Christmas and throughout the year. It was great to talk about our traditions and give each other permission to grieve and remember in a way that feels right for us. As always, please remember you're not alone and we're here to support you. To find out more, please visit www.heldinourhearts.org.uk or email info@heldinourhearts.org.uk. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram.